WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and congratulations, Yankee fans. Did you stay up for the whole thing? Are you a little bleary-eyed this morning? We have an online feature today on our webpage, a New York Yankees acronym contest. Make up an acronym for the word Yanks or the word Matsui at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll read some of the best ones on tomorrow's show, our Yanks or Matsui acronym contest at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, does technology reinforce or break down barriers between high tech and low, between rich and poor? Every week this month, we're going to be joined by Ethan Zuckerman, whose work as a fellow of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society focuses on technology and international development. He founded Geek Corps, which pairs technology experts with businesses in emerging nations, and is the co-founder of the website Global Voices Online, a website that wants to bridge the gap of language and geography by translating blog posts from around the world. Ethan Zuckerman, welcome so much. Welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Brian. And let me say, as a diehard Red Sox fan and resident of Massachusetts, a hearty, although somewhat bitter, congratulations to all the New Yorkers out there.
My deep, deep sympathies to all the Red Sox fans in the audience. There's a name for what Global Voices Online does, right? It's called bridge blogging, or did you invent that term to describe the website?
I think the person who actually invented the term is Xiao Chang, who's a scholar of Chinese online media out at the University of California at Berkeley. And he was working on an amazing project, it's still going, called China Digital Times. And this is a project that looks very, very closely at what's going on online media in China and then translates it and makes it available for a global audience. We thought this was such a great idea, what Xiao was doing, trying to open a window to China, that we started doing this literally all over the world with a focus on the developing world, trying to figure out how we could bring conversations that were taking place in this new online space and then open them up to a global audience. What we found is that a lot of people use new media, whether it's blogs, whether it's videos, whether it's Twitter, to try to explain what's going on in their own space, their own culture, to a global audience. Pretty different from just writing for a local audience. You use different language. Sometimes you literally speak in a different language than you would if you were just talking to your friends and family. Instead, you're talking to the wider world. And it's a great set of voices to feature and to listen to.
And I see that Global Voices has been bridging the gap recently on topics such as H1N1 and President Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. But what are you trying to bridge? Is it just a matter of language itself?
It's really a question of perspective. One of the things that my co-founder and I, Rebecca McKinnon, and I started talking a great deal about was we were very excited about this Web 2.0 idea 5 years ago, the idea that a much larger set of people would have a chance to speak online, would have a chance to share their ideas. We started wondering whether people would listen to other people's ideas. So it was one thing to be able to simply get online and put your voice out there. It's another thing entirely to be heard. And we realized that you had to do at least three things to do this. You had to filter through all the people out there, because while it can be very interesting to find out what someone had for lunch in Canton, it probably isn't something you want to hear every single day. Second, you have to translate. You literally have to bridge these gaps. gaps of these barriers of language. And then third of all, you have to provide context about this. If someone is talking about the intricacies of politics in Madagascar, you need to provide enough explanation of what's going on in that situation that an American audience or a European audience can figure out what's going on. Our goal was basically to diversify the set of issues we were talking about, and when we're talking about even familiar issues, can we diversify the voices that we're hearing in that conversation?
So, listeners, I'm curious. Call up if you read any foreign language blog, and I wonder if you see differences in how things are being discussed. H1N1, Obama's Nobel Peace Prize, the gay marriage of two Kenyans is another one that Global Voices has been looking at recently. China's snowmaking, race and gender politics in the United States. These are all things that are on Global Voices Online's radar screen. Do you read blogs from other countries and other languages? What are you finding in terms of cultural similarities and differences with respect to how major issues are being addressed? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You want to pick any one of those from the list that I gave that you've been looking at and just tell us something you've been learning, or how people in other languages are dealing with some of these issues in ways that Americans may not realize or have it occur to them?
Sure. Well, let's jump in on that question of gay marriage in Kenya. We've got an amazing new author. This author is writing under a pseudonym. The pseudonym is Haut Haiku. And the reason that the author is writing under a pseudonym is that it's pretty dangerous to be gay and out in Kenya right now. And that story looked at the fact that a pair of Kenyan men got married in the U.K., and there have been really serious repercussions for them at home, particularly for their families. Not so much societal, but even more media. What the piece draws out is basically the fact that Kenyan media saw this as a big scandal and essentially put reporters outside of the homes of both men's family. And tried to sort of dig up dirt about it. One of the things that Haut Haiku is doing for us, he's not our main Kenyan author. He's really sort of covering the gay and lesbian blogosphere around the world. But he's been opening up a conversation that I hadn't been aware of, despite the fact that I read an enormous number of African blogs and have done so for years. One of the things that we're learning about all of these things is that to really tell you what's going on in a community, someone needs to be a member of that community, and they need to bridge from that community to the wider world. So we were able to basically peer into a discussion about gay encounters and violence in Ghana, West Africa. It's evidently become fairly common for scammers to put up profiles on gay dating sites, agree to meet men, and then beat them and rob them. And the gay community in Ghana has been responding to this by creating an online Facebook of scammers. So if you get an offer from someone to meet you for a date that turns out to be that you think might be too good to be true, you can actually look at this Facebook and check it out. It's a really interesting community response to a problem that's been pretty specific to that community. And it's a conversation that would have been completely opaque to us unless someone was capable of taking a look and sort of bridging between that and this wider conversation.
As newspaper bureaus close around the world, is this becoming increasingly our only way in to understanding what's going on in a lot of other places?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I think that the situation with the protests in Iran was a real watershed moment for citizen media. I think the fact that most news bureaus found themselves, even if they were in Iran, they couldn't go out in the streets, they couldn't report on the protests, and they found themselves highly dependent on citizen media, listening to people both in Iran and also a lot of Iranians out in the diaspora. One of the things that was interesting for us, since, of course, we have Persian-speaking staff, was that we were seeing at least two narratives coming out of Iran, one that was getting a lot of play in the U.S. and one that was getting very little play. The one that got a lot of play was the dissatisfaction with the election and with Ahmadinejad. We were also seeing a lot being written in the online Persian blogosphere, suggesting that U.S. and U.K. attention to this was a way of trying to overthrow a valid election. Now, whether or not you think that's, a crazy view of these things, it's very, very interesting to hear articulate religious Persian bloggers talking about their fear that this is another form of U.S.-sponsored coup.
It was interesting to see yesterday that Iranians were out in the streets on the 30th anniversary of the student takeover of the U.S. embassy there, but not to protest against Satan, the United States, but rather to protest against their own government. So in that context, how can you tell, Ethan, whether the pro-Ahmadinejad or anti-U.S. Blog posts that you were seeing at that time were genuinely grassroots from ordinary people with Twitter or whatever and weren't being planted by the government?
Well, this is a question that we get every time we pull a narrative out of the Global Voices stew of blogs that doesn't particularly match a Western media narrative. It comes up in Iran. It particularly comes up in China, where this phenomenon of the 50-cent party, people who are being paid to write comments on sites and are most likely in the employ of the government. I think one of the things that we would say is that a lot of this has to do with magnitude. When we look at something like the Iranian blogosphere, we're aware that there's a group of reformist voices who get a lot of play in the U.S. There's also an enormous, enormous sphere, tens of thousands of blogs that are much more conservative, much more religious. And what part of our job is to sort of try to provide a much more diverse picture. It's one thing to create a couple of grassroots voices. It's probably much more difficult to create tens of thousands of grassroots voices that have written for many, many years. So by virtue of the fact that we've got someone paying attention to the Iranian blogosphere over the course of many years, someone who is an Iranian blogger is very well versed in different aspects of that scene, I think we're able to give some context that's actually pretty hard when mainstream media sort of swoops into citizen media to look for a new set of voices or perspectives on a bit of breaking news.
My guest is Ethan Zuckerman from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard and Global Voices Online, a website that wants to bridge the gap of language and geography by translating blog posts from around the world. And Ankit in Edison reads some blogs from different languages and different countries. Ankit, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
What do you read?
I read some Iranian, Russian, and Indian blogs, just very like now, very set, because I myself am a vice president of my own nonprofit. But the key thing that I've noticed, and I think it's very good to have this strike of balance, sort of, is that the perspective that although you're translating this, it's very important to preserve and maintain the culture. That's not to say that they don't bring the issues, but a lot of times when I've talked to, whether I've read the blogs or when I talk to those people directly, a lot of times they try to bring the issues and make it more understandable in sort of the Western culture, and I much rather go in, understand that culture than them trying to translate and sort of bring the analogy, which kind of ruins the whole perspective of it.
Can you give me one real quick example?
Well, the Indian one, the Indian blog, it just actually happened, I think it was a couple of days ago, where they were talking about how the society, or because I focus on community, how the community is lacking, and they try to say, oh, you know, we wish we were like in America, and we wish we were trying to, they were talking about the whole, American, where they have no sense of how do I put it? They're always texting and they're always, drinking their soy lattes and always doing that type of the analogy. The analogy wasn't really, it kind of destroyed the element of what they were talking about, how they, compared to American life, the average American teenager has a totally different area of issues to worry about than to the way the average, let's say, the Indian has to worry about.
That is so interesting. And Ankit, we're going to leave it there, because we're going to run out of time. Anything there you want to react to, Ethan, or put in context of what you're seeing on Global Voices?
I think the big thing that I'd want to say is that there's this incredible balancing act when you're trying to listen to voices from around the world. you're trying to pay attention to someone who's got a very different perspective. That can be incredibly hard. It's hard to make the decision to go out and look for those voices because you're basically making yourself look at something that you didn't know that you wanted to pay attention to. So that balancing act between finding something unfamiliar and also finding things that are relevant to an audience in the U.S. is one of the big tensions that we deal with when we try to open this world to a wider audience.
So you'll be back with us once a week this month to explore more Global Voices online and talk about your related work. Anything the listeners might do in the meantime before you come back next Thursday? Anything to look at in particular on Global Voices online or anything else?
Well, one thing that I hope we'll keep talking about is this question of language and translation. I would love to urge everyone to take a look at a site called Meedan, M-E-E-D-A-N. This is a project that tries to build bridges between Arabic and English speakers using both automated translation and a lot of human translation. So if you Google Meedan, you'll find some fascinating conversations taking place, as well as some reflection about how language can divide us and also maybe bring us together.
Fascinating. So why don't we follow up on that next week, and listeners, you can go during the week to Meedan. Is it M-E-E-D as in David, A-N?
That's correct. Meedan.org, I believe.
.org. Ethan Zuckerman from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society and Global Voices Online. This has been a great start to what I think will be four great conversations. Thank you so much.